pleasure it is to be with you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Power Hour Radio Show. I'm your honored host, Daniel Brigman, and we got a special guest today. She's actually sitting right here, and you'll see the YouTube video. It's my cousin. You know, I talk about my family. I couldn't get my medical in-laws who love vaccines. I couldn't get one of them here, but I got my cousin here. She's going to talk to us today. And I've mentioned you. I don't know, Lise, if you heard on the show, whatever. I mention you every once in a while talking about this PPP, PPE, whatever it is, the money from the government. It's kind of a little bit familiar with your story. I don't think they know the details or how big a story this really is. So that's why you're here today.
Yes, sir. I look forward to it. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Oh, my gosh.
That's my southern way.
Okay, sure. Ladies and gentlemen, we weren't here yesterday because Todd had a little family thing. So Todd's going through something from Global Star. Just please shout out to him and pray for him and his family. I think everything's fine, but just please pray for them. They could use your support and your prayers. A lot going on newsworthy. We're going to talk about a few of these before we get to Lisa. One, China, you sent me a story actually this morning, Lisa, and I saw this. China and India are on the border and people are dying. They actually had some conflict there.
Yeah. Yep.
There's three or four places where actual India and China meet, and there's kind of a military or something kind of connection there for an opportunity. And on one of them, from what we're hearing, and you know, who knows what the truth is, especially coming from China, but it seems like somewhere around 11 people have died or at least been injured. And what does that mean? I don't know what it means, but put it together with North Korea. North Korea has now attacked the facility in South Korea. So you have China and India having a skirmish on the border. You have skirmish on the border. You have South Korea and North Korea with a little skirmish. So Asia's in disarray. What does it mean long term? I think it means that there's not a lot of stability. I think in any of these situations, if you assume stability right now, you're probably making a false assumption. Because I don't care where it is around the world, Hong Kong, especially when you're talking about China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, are they going to take over Taiwan? Are they just going to bully? Is it... we know that's what they want. We know they want a unified China. We know they want Hong Kong. We know they want Taiwan. So China can, what's it? I can't, it's a Dutong or Dutong. It's a word. There's a Chinese word, and that's what they want. And that's what they want more than anything, supposedly, for their empire to be kind of re-put back together. The Supreme Court decision, you've probably heard this by now, LGBT question was... And I actually talked to an employment lawyer, a friend of mine from Atlanta, and he filled me in on kind of some of the details because I was concerned. So let's kind of separate myth from what's actually happened. The Supreme Court has ruled 6-3 that you can, just like you can't fire somebody because they're black or because they're white. You can't fire somebody because they're white. You can't fire somebody because they're, you know, of Indian descent or what have you. Well, now you cannot fire somebody because they're gay or trans or they're transitioning. My immediate concern when I heard this is this going to open the doorway to some sort of affirmative action situation? Okay, now you got to hire so many whites, so many blacks, so many Mexicans, so many gays, so many transgenders. Is that where this is going? My employment lawyer friend, he's a very serious employment lawyer. This is not just nobody off the street. He said, no, that is not the case, at least at this time. Absolutely not. It is just, you cannot fire somebody for being gay. Now, a religious institution, my second thought, and I asked him about the, you know, the Catholic Church. What about the Catholic Church? So the Catholic Church hires somebody to be a teacher, and they kind of agree, hey, you're going to be a teacher in a Catholic Church. You got to at least semi-adherent to Catholic philosophies or any, you know, Baptist school, whatever. And he said, in that case, if it was a basketball day camp, they probably couldn't fire him for being gay. If it was a teacher where they're teaching values on a regular basis, then yes, they could. They could fire them because it's against their tenets of their religion and what they're trying to get across. Atlanta. I have a take on the situation in Atlanta. I think this is... First of all, let me put this out there, and I want everybody to understand two things about the two major events of this year so far have been me seeing my cousin. No, just kidding. It is to me that I got to see my cousin, which is very cool. No, the two major events in the world are the coronavirus, whatever the details of that, and the George Floyd. Here, what I've always wanted you to remember about those two events. One, the coronavirus, no matter what they say, no matter what they put, no matter what nonsense they talk about it or not talk about it or disagree, I want everybody to always know that the coronavirus, COVID-19, is a man-made splinter GMO virus. That's been proven over and over again. You got to be half retarded to not know that by now if you've done any amount of research. It is a man-made virus. Okay, you draw your own conclusions, but let's start there. Let's start at that point, okay? It's a man-made virus. The George Floyd situation, what I want everybody to know among anything is George Floyd and that cop, Siobhan, they worked in the same place. They worked security in a nightclub, the same place. They knew each other. Is it a setup? Was it a hit? Was it a drug deal gone bad? Was it a lover's quarrel? Was it a, what was it? I don't know, but that is an awfully big coincidence that they were so connected to me. Now, in the backdrop of everything that's going on, if you're a police chief in any municipality, are you not sitting down with your police and saying, for the love of God, do not pull your gun out unless unless you're being shot at, do not bring your gun out. Or, you know, well, what about our safety? Then don't put yourself in that situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's that simple. It should almost be that way anyway. It's kind of going to get to my point, but especially now in Atlanta, if you haven't heard, you probably have by now, another black man in custody, unarmed, was shot. The situation, the summary, he was in Wendy's. He fell asleep drunk in the drive-thru. I guess he wanted a cheeseburger, I guess. Mm-hmm. A double, Wendy's double.
Or Frosty.
Or Frosty. Yeah. Frosty. Frosty works. Double cheeseburger or in a Frosty. And some fries. Let's go all the way. Let's just go all the way. Well, anyway, well, while he was waiting, he was a little inebriated, allegedly, and passed out in the drive-thru. So the Wendy's employees call the police. So your friendly neighborhood police show up and, you know, get him out of the car, give him a sobriety test. He's very compliant. He's talking with them, what have you. It's pretty obvious he's probably drunk. I mean, from everything, the video, there's a cam, body cam, what have you. Then it gets serious when they want to arrest him. They want to arrest him and he doesn't want to be arrested. And who does? And so he struggles with it, hits one of the cops, grabs his taser and starts to run away. Points the taser back at the cop. This is pretty much, everybody's pretty much agreeing on these details. Points the taser back at the cop and runs away. The cop then shoots them three times. Not once, three times. In the chest, in the back. Or in, not the chest, but the reverse of the chest, the back. And he's dead. They burned the Wendy's down. Somebody did. Somebody burned the Wendy's down. Now, we know, before I get into any more of this, our audience knows this. America is starting to wake up to this. And this is such good news. We know about Operation Gladio. It's been proven in congressional hearings. We know that the CIA will plan and plant false scenarios to push agendas. We know that. That's not even in question anymore. It's been proven in Congress. Is one of these things one of those types? I have no idea. I do not know. We've seen so many suspicious things, whether it's Sandy Hook or what have you. I don't know what the truth is anymore. You know, and William Casey's quoted as saying, we know we'll succeed when everything that Americans believe is a lie. Remember that quote? The head of the CIA, former head of the CIA said that. Well, we're getting close. I don't know what the truth is. But let's look at this individual case. Because you're not going to hear the end of this. Since the man that ran away, the black man that ran away, I think he's like 26, 27 years old. He ran away and he pointed a taser back at him. There's going to be some doubt in some jury's mind that, well, he could have been a gun, could have been whatever, but not true because they frisked him. I mean, it's such a, Are they going to be able to convict him of some, you know, second degree murder or whatever? I kind of doubt it, to be honest with you. So when they don't, then what's going to happen there? Okay, Dan Bongino on Fox News, he did a little expose and talked about, well, there's a bad decision and a worse decision here for the cops, and the cops was kind of in a little bit of a no-win situation and made the worst decision. One thing he said that I'm going to take offense to, and you know how I feel about police. I've been over this adamantly over and over, and it's becoming clearer and clearer every single day. He said, the police did not initiate the force. He's assuming the police did not initiate the force. Let me make this very clear to Dan Bongino and anybody who's listening. When the police go to arrest you, they are exercising force on you. You can say it's justified force. We almost assume in our mind, we disconnect like, oh, the police weren't doing anything. Yes, they were. That police was arresting him. That is where the force originated. Whether it's justified or not, let's get in our mind, let's get it straight. When police go to these scenes, there's a moment, there's an opportunity, they can handle it 1,000 different ways. More and more, they're being trained for their own safety, for their own court system, for a lot of reasons. Their attitude, and they have bad attitudes, a lot of them do. They do. They just do. I'm not saying their job's easy. But they instituted the force on him. He resisted and didn't want to be arrested. Now, what were they going to arrest him for? That's what I'd like to know. Public intoxication? Well, he's in his car. I mean, maybe they could come up with something. I don't know. He wasn't on the street. I don't know. Maybe there's some statute. He was in a Wendy's, which is a private business parking lot. So maybe there's some statute. I don't know. That's neither here nor there. People need to understand. These police need to understand. At one point in America, how would this situation have been handled? Let me ask you this. In 1960, probably a black man in Atlanta, you can probably use your imagination. Let's assume it's a white man. Let's just assume race is out of it. It's two white people. There's no racial component to it. How would that situation have been handled in 1960? Well, Tom, you're in this parking lot. I don't care how many cheeseburgers you want. You're drunk. What are you doing? That's what the police would have said to Tom. Well, hell, I was hungry. I had a little too much to drink. I mean, we're laughing here,
that's exactly it.
But that's how it would have went, right? Yep. And the policeman said, now, Tom, get in the back of the car. I'll drive you home. And then, is your wife home? Let's bring her up here. Let's get your car. God almighty, Tom. Come on now. This is ridiculous. Okay? And that's how it would have been handled. So at some point between 1960 and now 60 years later, the police have now killed somebody. And they say, well, they didn't institute the force. What the hell you mean they didn't institute the force or initiate the force? Of course he initiated the force. He tried to arrest that guy. I'm not saying he should, shouldn't. That's a whole other issue. The police are instituting force all around. And who do they work for? Well, I work for your safety. Oh, were they working for Tom's safety there or whatever this guy's, are you trying to tell me the police were working for that young man's safety? You think I'm naive? You think I'm stupid? Do you think the police were working for his safety? I mean, come on. They wanted to arrest him, put him in the car, drag him down to court. They're going to find him, put him in DUI, put him on the probation. It's money, the court system, the feeder system, the whole thing. Put him in jail. You know they cost $22.50 a night. How long is he going to be in jail? Maybe he's poor. Maybe he can't get a lawyer. Maybe he's going to be in jail for 6 weeks times $22.50. I mean, that's a lot of money right there. Where do you think that goes? Well, they can buy a new squad car. Do you see the financial? Do you see who the police work for when a push comes to shove? And they'd sit there and lecture, well, we are here to keep you safe. Don't tell me you think you're here to keep America safe. Well, that young man, that black man in Atlanta in Wendy's that wanted a hamburger, he's an American too. So even though you think he's doing something wrong or something he shouldn't, which apparently he was, your job is still to keep him safe too. Do you think he's safer in jail and in the system and have to deal with that and some judge and go through that deal? Maybe he needs help. Well, we'll get him a help in jail. Come on. Put him in the back of the car. You say, where do you live, buddy? Is your wife home? You got a friend? What? Yeah, let me drive you home. Well, they're busy. Oh, busy doing what? I thought they're supposed to keep America safe. That's what they keep lectures about. We're going to keep Americans safe. Well, you're keeping Americans safe. You're bringing them home. That's your job. The police do not work for you. They work for municipalities, and they enforce statutes of city corporate municipalities. They have an interest, the city, and you have an interest, the people of the United States. When those interests mesh, everything's fine. Everybody loves cops. When they don't mesh and there's a disagreement, where do the cops side? Almost all the time. Yes, your Uncle Jack, who's a cop, is very good, and he kind of lets things slide and sides with people. Yes, he's fine. But for the most part, as an institution, where do the police side? Where do they side? With the city, with the municipality, with the corporation, and that's what they enforce. And they say, well, that's the law. Oh, is it? You gonna lecture me about the law now? Because the Bill of Rights is the law, isn't it? Isn't that what they take the oath to? Tell me that to the police, or to the police in Mississippi in that church parking lot. We shouldn't have went nuts about George. It shouldn't have took George Floyd to make us go nuts about these cops the last 6 months. Americans, Christians, all over this country should have lost their freaking mind when those cops in Mississippi gave all those people, elderly most of them, a $500 ticket for sitting in the church parking lot in Mississippi. And that wasn't the only place. There were lots of other places that did that. They should have lost their freaking minds at these people. What in God's name are you doing, and who are you, and who do you work for? Are you out of your gosh darn mind? Well, I'm just doing my job. Doing your job? What are you, a Nazi now? Because that's the same excuse they use. This discussion, these debates are going to rage on for a long time. Let's get rid of the police. Let's do this. Let's do that. Whoa, whoa. Who knows where this is going to go? The basic premise is this. Are you going to serve the people of the United States and honor your oath? Or are you going to serve this municipality and do, quote unquote, keep your job and do your job? What are you going to do? Which one? That's what I'd like to know. And so the situation in Atlanta, this is just the beginning. Who knows if these situations are planned, if they're real, if they're fake, if they're organic, if they're any of the things. We don't need to find a black person who's damaged to see police oversight. We should have went crazy when police in Mississippi are giving elderly people $500 tickets for sitting in a church parking lot listening to the radio. We should have went out of our minds. So where is the fervor? Where is the righteous indignation? Where is the liberty? The land of the free, home of the brave. Where is it? Because government, what the founding fathers knew above probably all else, other than maybe their, you know, the source of our rights, I would say. What they knew about government, all else, is it will always want to grow. It will always want to take power. It is a parasite. It is like fire, a dangerous servant, a fearful master, George Washington said. It will always want to grow. There's always a financial vested interest that this grows. Always. And so whose job is it to keep it in check? Well, I back the blue. Oh, you do? You back the blue. Why do you back the blue? So they can give old ladies tickets for going to church? Why do you back the blue? You say, why back the blue? Why? Because they don't back you. You say, well, my cops are good. No. Don't lecture. Come on. They don't. When push comes to shove, they don't. Now, some of them might do certain things, blah, blah, blah. When push comes to shove, they do not. If that offends you, I really don't care at this point. I mean, what do we got to lose? Somebody is trying. This discussion is trying to reform our whole institution of our country. The first 60, 70 years of our country, ladies and gentlemen, there were no police. There was all sheriffs. And I said, get rid of every damn police. Get rid of every damn one. Get rid of every one of them. I don't care. Just hire more sheriff deputies. Because at least the sheriffs are accountable to the people. A sheriff is elected by the people. If you don't like him, if you don't like what he's doing, you can get rid of him. And people say, well, you know, you got these redneck backwoods sheriffs in these small counties and they just run them up. Okay, so what? That's one county. That's one county out of 3,100. Now with these police force in these cities and the power they're gaining and the MRAPs and how they're being trained, you have a occupying force. It's like the Red Coat 1776. England just invaded Boston Harbor and they're wearing a blue suit and carrying a gun and harassing drunk people at Wendy's parking lots. Do you understand? Do you understand this? And then somebody can argue. You can say whatever you want. in my mind, in my estimation, you're wrong. If you want to defend the institution of the police, you're wrong. You're wrong. They do not work for you. And you're seeing it now. When we've needed, and they say, well, they keep us safe. Okay, go ask that autonomous zone in Seattle. Okay, you want another point, case in point. What are the police chiefs doing? Well, they're not letting me, the mayor stopping me. Well, who do you work for? Well, obviously he works for the mayor. He doesn't work for you, his oath. And notice the sheriff down in Lakeland County or Lakeland, Florida. Notice him talk about, he got on TV. He says, I'm telling all citizens, have a gun in your house. If somebody loots your house, just shoot him dead. Do you see the difference? Do you see the difference? Because that sheriff's accountable to one group and one group only, the people of the United States. So who does he serve? The people of the United States. It's that simple. Who do the police serve? Well, the mayor won't let me go in there and straighten out that Chaz, that autonomous zone with that little kitty gate. It's funny, isn't it? That little bunch of thugs with a little kitty gate. And where the police are supposed to keep us safe. Well, they're not keeping us safe. Well, the mayor's not letting us. Okay. Well, that proves my point is what I'm saying. They don't work for you. They don't work for their oath. It's obvious. We got just a few seconds before we go to break, and the rest of the hour we'll do with you, Lise. You have any thoughts before we go to break on any of this that we talked about?
No. This is, I told you as I drove down here, I saw a now hiring sign. I thought, wow, that's kind of interesting. People are hiring. That's good. And I looked at it, and it was the police department. So I was just like, okay, well, I don't know about that then. So.
Well, yeah. See, that's the other auxiliary or ancillary problem with this is the people who are decent police, who are good, the good, mm-hmm. hard, who really do have a genuine love for the community, what have you, they're going to say, forget this.
Exactly.
I'm out of here.
Exactly.
I'm out of here.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, more with my cousin on the other side. You really want to hear her story and what she went through. This is America's story, her business and everything with the PPP and what the government, you know, the government's here to help. Was it the nine scariest words? I'm from the government. You'll hear the story on the other side. Listening to the Power Hour. Stay tuned.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Break the bond to Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
You know what my mission was when I started this, when I was so excited? I still am excited after 21 years. I said anybody who's got mouth must use Vitamer toothpaste and mouthwash if they want to stay healthy. I'm going to make sure that it is available to anywhere I can put the product.
You got a lot of zinc in these products.
Zinc inhibits plaque growth. Zinc is also known to have an antibacterial properties. Also, zinc works to eliminate bad breath by destroying volatile sulfur compounds. Such an incredible product. And
wow.
I'm so proud to say my wife did that and saved my life, saved my mouth. And she is the mother of all the people who are using a Vitamer toothpaste and mouthwash in the world.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Buy from the good guys at theparamall.com. That's theparamall.com.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com. Or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Kirkman by calling 877-817-9829 or order at theparamall.com. That's theparamall.com.
Welcome back to the Power Hour. Thank you so much for all your support and all you do. I know it's been a little challenging. Maybe it's been good. I've been away. Maybe you like all the other the guest hosts. I don't know. No, I sure miss you guys, and we're making an effort doing a little family thing still, and thank you so much for your patience with letting me see some family and, you know, my wife being pregnant and all that. So thank you so much. Thank you for your support at the Power Mall, thepowermall.com, thepowermall.com, 877-817-9829. All the fantastic products. I was just talking to somebody this morning. I was playing tennis this morning when the guy was talking about his chest, and he had the crease on his ear. And I told him 2 days ago, I said, you got some arterial blockage. And he talked to me today. He said, you know what? I was running the other day and I was feeling some tightness in my chest. I said, yeah, that's what that means. You got some kind of arterial blockage. It's called the Frank sign. And he did some research on it. So we're going to get him on some heart drops. And, so that and so many other products at the Power Mall. Don't forget the decision for a state victory, the Sheriff Mac, the little pamphlet, the pocket constitution, these things. It should be in our minds and our hearts and on our refrigerators. The Bill of Rights is the foundation which connects us to the Declaration of Independence, which is the birth of this nation. And it matters if we say it matters. It matters if we say it matters. That's what I firmly believe. So now let me introduce my cousin to you. I've talked about her quite often, especially lately with everything's going on with the businesses and the COVID and what have you. She runs a spa. I don't know how much you want to tell. You run a spa. Why don't you introduce kind of what business you do and kind of a little bit about your story and how you came to be a business owner where you're at?
Well, when I actually went to college and graduated from that and went into corporate world, I was in the big pharma world at the time. And
a drug pusher.
I was a drug pusher. And realized after about 6 years of being in that industry that it was not taking off quite as what I wanted to do. So I was just like, this isn't the world for me. Not to mention I wanted more personal touch with people and to help them on a more, I would say, natural level. I just knew that the medications weren't exactly handling what was happening. So I was fortunate to have the area of mental health and women's health. And, you know, people were just mainly dealing with a lot of stress. So at 30 years old, I went and said, I'm going to open a day spa. Back then, which was 2000, that was a very popular industry that was just booming. And the day spa, meaning all-encompassing hair, nails, skin, massage, was a very convenient place for people to go. And so that was now 19 years ago this month. And we've done very well. We are in a small community north of the Charlotte area, and we're very proud of what we've done. It's a family business. My mom helps me run it. And we consider the people we work with family. I mean, we've been there double-digit years, single-digit years for some, but double-digit years for many. Some that won 18 years.
I don't know. You know, we talked a little bit before this interview, and it's always hard interviewing family because mm-hmm. you assume so much. So mm-hmm. for audience, I don't want to assume. So just tell whatever you, if I ask you something, just, you know, tell what you tell. Don't mm-hmm. tell what you don't want to tell. But so about how many people are at work at your establishment?
We usually have about 12 people. So it's very, what I call a small business. So just in
12
general.
12 people's not, I mean, that's not nothing.
Well, but when you see something out saying, oh, small business is 500 or less people, you know, that 12 compared to 500, that's quite a range.
Right. Do you know the statistics on, I used to know this, and maybe I should have boned up before we'd done this, but isn't something like half the country works in small business?
Oh, it's the largest employer, more than corporate.
Small business. Yeah. Even like 12 people, yeah. What's the percentage of like 15 people or less that are?
I wouldn't know that. I wouldn't be able to tell you that. I can tell you that it's a lot.
It's significant.
And what happened was in 2007, you know, it's everyone had to leave corporate world. There wasn't any jobs available. There weren't any jobs available. So people ended up opening up small businesses. Service industry, you can't go wrong. People really want that service and taking care of that. Of course, today now we're in a totally different situation where now we're seeing that service industry kind of being invaded. So yeah.
I think it's very interesting, and I don't know how far you want to go down this line either, but at one time, America was not a service economy. It was a manufacturing economy. It was a building economy. It was an innovative economy. And then at some point, oh, you know, we were told, you know, our jobs going to Mexico is fine. Everything will be better. It'll be a service economy. You'll like that more. Yeah, that'll be better, right?
Yes.
And here lately with the COVID, then they're saying, well, no, now you can't even do services.
No, now we're taking away that. Yeah,
exactly. Now we're even taking away your services. So describe a little bit for the audience how it broke down. You saw what was going on in China. Obviously, we talked a little bit about COVID and the whole thing, and you started to see it progress, and then how that affected you and your business, and when you were shut down, and all that. Just how did that go for you?
Well, back in the days when I was in pharmaceuticals, one of my areas of one of the conditions I took care of was immunology. So I knew that having a worldwide pandemic, which was growing very fast, I said, this is something that if it's spreading, it's going to spread even further. Because I saw that they were stopping travel, but just not enough. And listening to the beginning stages of the virus and what the little bit they did know, it's like, this isn't something that's going to happen and just go.
So you saw from your experience, you said, this is going to come here. There's a problem here.
This is going to come here, and then it was here, and then I said, okay, this is not going away in 4 weeks, which is what the White House had
said
it started. I said, it can't. This is just, that's not
the
nature.
We'll have everything straight by Mother's Day. Don't worry.
It just wasn't going to happen. Yeah. So I just was like, we're looking at, and President Trump did kind of put out there July, accidentally, I think, obviously, and I was like, that's about right. That maybe by July there'll be a comfort level, but it's not going to be the same. So I knew this was going to happen. I immediately shut down my business for the sake of my team and our guests, because we are a community-based business.
Well, it's not only that. It's like, you know, you're not selling widgets. You're doing massages. You're a very interpersonal type business. So it's
yep. And what we do is, even though we're a day spa, it's not just about beautification. We really try to focus on wellness and therapeutic and really with de-stress. That was always my goal from number one, being in mental health before. I really wanted a place people could come and be able to talk to someone without knowing that what happens in the room stays in the room. And that's what I wanted, and that's what we are. So we have a lot of people with autoimmune conditions. We have a lot of people with, you know, they're age-related. Our community is a variety of ages. And my mom, she's 73 years old, you know, and she works there every day, healthy as can be, and, you know, puts the rest of us to shame. But, I mean, that's just – so it's – so that was something I knew that our clients and our team, I just was like, I don't want to take a risk. I could not live with that myself. So I shut down before North Carolina shut down, because our state in North Carolina, they just – they forgot about us. And it's
forgot about us, meaning
our industry.
Your industry,
yeah.
Meaning the massage industry,
yeah,
or hair industry, or just
all of it. They forgot. They just didn't. They didn't. It's almost like there's a disconnect of what the service industry is. You know, they thought about the restaurants, but they didn't think about the people actually face over face working on the face or touching a body and massaging it and trying to work everything out in a, you know, smaller room that's dark.
Okay. So you make the decision, and probably a lot of other places, it's a similar, your competition or similar business, they mm-hmm. they had to make the same decision.
They did.
So you shut down somewhere in the spring or late spring.
Mid-March, yep.
Mid-March, mm-hmm. okay. And then you started to, like a lot of people, okay, what's next? I'm confused. I'm whatever. How did information start coming from the government, or what were you being told? What was that like?
Well, first of all, when we began to shut down, I was watching the TV every moment I could possibly get because I wanted to know what
getting
I needed
stressed.
To do.
Get a little stressed. Too.
Well, the stress was there, but that's something I took on as a business owner. And I mean, you had to deal with my stress and listening to me a little bit too. But I mean, I knew that was part of it, but I wanted to be fully aware and watch this and see what's going on because I needed to take care of my team. I needed to make sure I had a living for my family. And that's what all the small business owners were doing the same. We were all connected with Facebook and talking and trying to figure out what's going on. Sharing was amazing in our community. But I was watching that. And so I knew with both my mother and I, we were with our accountant, having our accountant research because they started talking about PPP.
And does PPP stand for?
Paycheck Protection Plan. I mean, it's basically payroll, right. Paycheck. It's there to really help try to make sure we can keep our employees so that when we are through this process of this pandemic, or at least safe or comfortable, you know, we're paying our people meanwhile. And that's the whole point, was to pay them meanwhile to keep them.
Okay.
The problem was, but even though we did all this research and we had our accounting firm research, we had things downloaded like crazy before it even started, before it even got to the bank. It was already 2 weeks before the House would pass it. So, okay, now our people are almost 3 weeks behind in pay. Small businesses don't have the liquidity like a 500 plus business does.
Well, it's not only some of these don't have the liquidity. You know, you see these corporations out here, even now, some of them are still, like the Disney store around here, it's still not open.
No.
Disney can go to Wall Street and borrow $100 million like that.
Yeah.
Or half a billion like that.
Mm-hmm.
They have virtually unlimited liquidity, especially right now with the way things are. Small business is a completely different animal. Yeah. So anyway, so you're going through this, you're hearing that the government is going to do something to help your position, to help you maintain this, but yet things get dragged. They're arguing about, I remember yep. Nancy Pelosi was, we were talking about that. They're arguing about this. Talking to you, what became clear to me that I didn't understand is that a business like yours, your interests and the interests of the individual workers, the employees, they're two different interests. And I didn't realize yes, it's obvious, right? They're different. I didn't realize how different they were. And how you're interconnected, but you have totally separate interests. And what the government did, what you started to teach me as this went on, this started to affect you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's two parts to this that I want to address in the rest of the time. We got about, I don't know, 12 minutes or so. One, how difficult it was for you to get the so-called help that every politician's talking about and everybody's, mm-hmm. you know, you're doing the right thing and you run a great business and a community bedrock. And then two, how difficult that was, and two, the government's actions and how that affected your business and the employees. So take them in any order you
okay.
want.
Well, what was supposed to be originally with this PPP plan was that it was going to be directly from the IRS. That was what President Trump wanted to have happen.
Directly from the government,
yep,
from
paycheck,
the Federal Reserve, right?
Yep, you apply, put in your account the next day, you're ready to go.
No problem.
No problem. But the House got involved, they wanted the banks involved, and my 19-year relationship with my bank was that they still required two underwriting processes, while other banks required one, and some required none. And mine's the sixth largest bank in the country. So I was just like, we've been with you for 19 years, four or five different accounts from business to professional with family and et cetera. So we ended up basically having to go through this. We totally missed the first process because they required two underwriting processes. Not to mention the SBA kept changing the guidelines. The banks didn't know what to do. Our bank took longer than other banks to get it enacted. Some banks didn't even get it enacted for some of the small businesses.
All right, let me summarize this and you tell me where I'm, you know, mm-hmm. where I'm right or wrong. You're banking with a very large bank mm-hmm. in America. You've had a very long-standing relationship, successful business for almost 20 years. You go to get the money as prescribed by the government. They make you jump through double hoops. They have double underwriters, if you know that process. You know, not one underwriter, two underwriters. Mm-hmm. And the money's not even coming from them, supposedly.
No, not, no.
The money's not even coming from them. And they got two, and they got two underwriters. And then they're all they're doing is pushing you and frustrating you more and more.
Yep. And I was asking for $38,000. I mean, that's all. That's, yeah. I mean, that's it. Yeah. Just enough to pay for the few months that we knew we were going to be closed. And that was actually less than what we really kind of honestly wanted, because the way they did the process, they based it on 2019, and they ended up looking at rent and payroll, and it just really was a really poor way of trying to figure that. Again, they didn't understand the small business.
And, or maybe they did.
Oh, that's true. Maybe. You're right. That's right. We talked about that.
Maybe they did.
Yeah.
You know, the background, this interview is really not the time to go into it, but I am going to mention it. During this whole time, from September till now, the bank's liquidity has been very poor. And to be able to have this flood of money, notice it didn't go through the IRS or straight to you from the Federal mm-hmm. Reserve. It did go to the banks. Mm-hmm. The money influx into the credit system, into the banks, this massive amount, trillions of dollars from this PPP Act went to the banks. Probably propped them up. That's just my guess. You had a huge bank. They wanted double underwriters. Think about the money sitting in account. Like every day they can push you back. They have certain regulations they have to meet at night. So much money has to be in their bank account. Do you know the power that if the longer that money can stay with them is immense. So dollars to donuts, I'm just going to say that may have had something to do with it.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, that, and I think too, honestly, from a government perspective, isn't it better unemployment number wise to have the larger companies, the 500 companies,
right.
500 employee companies get it first and then look at the, I mean, we eventually got it 8 weeks later. By then, all my people were on unemployment.
Well, I told you the story. I have another pretty good friend. He's got a fairly large business.
Mm-hmm.
First week it happened, bam, $750,000.
Yeah.
Bam.
Yeah.
Like that. Like nothing.
Yeah. Yes.
Like nothing. When really who they really need to help is the millions of small businesses like yourself. Anyway, so continue going on with this story. So what you're explain to the audience what this is like. Okay, they tell you on the phone, okay, give us this document, do this, do that, jump through this hoop, spin around, put your hand on your head, rub your belly, tap your
back. It wasn't even the phone. I'll be honest, Daniel. It was actually all email. It was all computer. They literally had no one you could speak with. When you try to ask a question, you had to go through an email. You would get a, you know, robot response. So you had no one to talk to, and they kept asking us to send documents over and over again, which we would do.
Same documents?
Yeah, we're at 9 o'clock at night running back because it was like.
You were staying on top of it.
We were staying on top of it, and we were going and scanning it through. But then every time we scanned it, which we didn't realize that because it doesn't, I mean, there's no one to talk to.
How do you know?
It would override the existing documents that were sent.
So it's like you're starting over.
So you're starting over. So that's what we went through this whole process. The only thing that saved us was 8 weeks later, we actually had someone with a decent heart that shouldn't have done it, but did do it. And they called us to let us know they needed this. If we didn't give it to them, we wouldn't get it. So we almost didn't get it.
And you would have no idea.
I would have had no idea because there was no one in the bank to talk to.
So literally, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but your experience with this, they basically were playing a shell game with you.
Yeah, it was just every day trying to communicate back and forth with no one to talk to. It was just banging your head against the wall for $38,000 to be able to pay your people. And by then, once they're on unemployment, now we can't take it away, so we can't use the PPP because they're on unemployment or they lose that, which honestly, all but two of us out of our 12 people are getting more on unemployment because when they work for us in our industry, we have a lot of people who work 2, 3, 4 days a week instead of 5. So, and that's where they want to be, but they were getting more on unemployment.
Okay, so this goes into the second part.
Yes.
So the government's in there trying to help. They make you jump through a hoop. The banks are involved, you know, the friend and neighborhood banks, and it's like pulling teeth to get your help that you need to actually keep your employees straight, to keep your business solid and be able to go forward. Because that's really, I think, what people don't understand. It's like, well, let's just shut off. Oh, well, let's just shut off for 2 months and then come back in 2 months. Oh, it's no big deal. You got to keep, you got supply, you got rent to pay, you got, you got to keep this thing liquid.
Yes.
So then
the insurances, everything.
The insurance companies doesn't want to hear about the coronavirus.
No, they don't.
They don't want to hear about coronavirus.
We actually asked. We said, hey, do we have a relief for this? And they said, no, they don't cover viruses anymore. We learned from that from the last time. So I'm like, okay.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for your help. I'll call you when you do tell me that you can help me, I guess.
Exactly, yes.
You just let me know when you can help me, okay?
So, but we still have to pay the check. We still have to write the check.
Right. I'll just keep paying you every month. Please call me when you can help me, okay? It'll save me the hassle. Anyway, you got a few minutes. We got a few minutes left.
Okay.
So then the unemployment and the employees and, you know, I'm not trying to, again, tell what you want to tell, but explain to our audience the government's intervention here, where that put you and how that affected your business.
Well, one, we had absolutely no revenue. So, I mean, there was just nothing to pay the bills. We
didn't
have
cash flow.
There's no cash flow. There's very little liquidity. We all understand the concept of trying to save for a rainy day, but this is a kind of different type of rainy day.
This is not a rainy day.
This is something else. So, and we also had our employees not having any income because when they work, they get compensated based on their work. So what happened was just, we went through this process. Our employees went on, I told them, go on unemployment because I need you to have something. I wanted them taken care of. I don't believe in turning to the government for that kind of help, but at this time, I wanted them taken care of. And I knew what that meant.
Hey, let me interject right there on that point because I know we've talked quite a bit. It almost came to the stage where the government or the circumstances forced you to turn to the government.
Yes, it did.
This whole thing, right?
Yep. Exactly.
I just want to interject. Anyway, go ahead. Continue.
Absolutely. And so basically, we finally got the PPP. Now we're sitting on it, and we don't know what to do with it because if we don't have a headcount by a certain date, then we have to pay it all back. Yet we have 50% of the revenue when we finally can open.
Right, because they won't let, it's not like you can just open.
No, we just can't open. And we have to take all these safety measures, buy all this equipment, buy all these additional supplies,
more money,
which we can't use the PPP for because that's just for rent and payroll. So we have to pull that out of retirement to be able to pay for that. And so, or get another loan, which right now, that's just nearly impossible.
We
couldn't get this one hardly. So we have our employees who are absolutely amazing people. But who wouldn't want to say, I've been home for a few months, and quite honestly, I'm enjoying it, and I wouldn't mind, I wouldn't mind having a few more weeks, or also, I'm a little scared because I might have an underlying condition, and a lot of our people do. And so they are. I mean, there's fear out there. So if you're getting some compensation, you're comfortable, and we actually were allowed to open Memorial Day weekend in North Carolina at 50% restriction, and I'm holding up again another 4 weeks because I do have most of my employees, I think all but one, with underlying conditions or age-related. And I don't want anyone hurt, so I'm having to make that decision, which is unfortunate from a standpoint of where I'm saying, you know, we have to open and make money, but I'm not going to do it at someone's risk. So you've got this factor of this fear factor, and then you've got this revenue fear factor. You've got the health and the revenue.
And then what are you supposed to tell your employees?
Yeah.
Get your butt back to work.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't tell them that.
Well, and I would just, it would just, you know, to see someone get hurt and if something happened to them, you know, there's just, that's not what we're about. We're about taking care of people.
But even beyond that, you know, I'm trying to, I guess they all become related, but I'm trying to segment them for our audience so they understand.
Yes.
The government paying them, the government is stepping in to try to help here and creating a level of dependency has taken their dependency away from their ability to produce. And so now they don't want to go produce, whether they want to blame it on the COVID, I'm saying this. I mean, I'm just looking at it. They can say, well, I'm scared about getting sick. I don't want to come back to work. I guess the fact that you're getting those checks in the mail, does that have anything to do with it? You know, in the back of it, it wouldn't be. You know, who doesn't want to sit home and get checks?
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Yeah. Where's that program?
Well, especially if you're afraid of your life. You know, I mean, that's what's out there.
Well, even if it's a small chance.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean I can, let's say I'm skeptical of the whole thing. Well, let's say, well, all right, there's a 5-10% chance. Oh, but I can stay home, no risk, and still get a check? Oh, I'll take that. I'll take
it. And that's kind of where it's leading to, and that's where it's been happening.
So. I'll take behind curtain 3, Monty, please.
Yeah.
I'll take that curtain, please. No problem. Yeah. We got a couple minutes. Through all your experience of this, what you've gone through, try to accept, you know, in a macro way, pull away from this and look down on America, what we're seeing. How can you prepare for the future? What are you trying to look at in the future? Are you scared about September and this all coming back, or the winter? Are you thinking long term? I mean, what goes through your mind as you have a more macro view?
Well, I have no doubt that being an election year, number one. Number two, there is no cure for a virus. There never has been. I highly doubt there ever will be. And it mutates like crazy. There's no cure.
Well, everybody knows the flu vaccine anymore. And I mean, everybody knows that.
Yeah, the flu vaccine, they can't keep up with the mutations. It never really works. So that's not going to happen. So yes, I see that I know, just like I said, this virus is going to last for 4 weeks. It's going to last much longer. That this is going to be something that's going to come back. And, you know, just like the policemen out there, that there's some good ones that are saying, you know, I'm just not going to put up with this. And that's basically what's happening in our industry.
With businesses.
With businesses and small businesses. This is the restaurants, everyone. It's like, it's not worth it. You know, it's too much work to not make any revenue.
Hey, Todd, hold the break. Just kill this, and then let's talk for a couple more minutes, and then we'll go to break. Go ahead.
But it's just basically all small business owners in our community are just basically saying this just isn't worth it, and we have to pivot. We have to pivot what we're doing as a business. The service industry is gone. It's basically at risk. We've set a precedence. We can be shut down. We can be closed.
At any second.
At any second. And it's being threatened to us right now. We're actually, our governor keeps saying he might have to back up to phase two, back up to phase one. And so.
And that means you're out. You're done again.
You're closed again. So what do you do? So.
And the fact that they're hinting at that would make me very nervous. Flip a coin, 50-50, what are the odds? You think this fall they're going to, the same COVID talk is coming back and they're going to be,
it's already there.
Well, you've got to be one of the first industries. They got to be like, you can't be massaging people.
Yep.
You can't be cutting somebody's hair.
Mm-hmm. It's already there. They're already talking about it. They're doing it with the schools. The way they're approaching it, it's already there. So we have to, you know, completely figure out how we take a service industry and turn it into technology. I mean, because it's the only, now we're getting to a point where we can't have personal service anymore. We have to get to technology. So we're having to pivot.
Wow.
And I mean, same thing with restaurants. It's all, you know, they're having to all based on home delivery and totally, and they're not making any money off of that.
Well, I've read some documents. There's some, Deborah Tavares is going to come on the show, I think the beginning of next week. And she has some documents about that, about Amazon Connected. But anyway, that's another story.
Yeah.
Jordan Maxwell is going to be here later this week, ladies and gentlemen, the end of the week. I'm going to spend a couple more days with my cousin here. And final thought, anything, you know, you do listen to the show semi-regularly. Anything you want to say to the audience or anything?
I would just say that, I mean, I think this is what we all try to say, is that really try to take a chance to really try to support your small business. And just, we're all trying to say be kind. We all have different approaches we're taking, wearing masks, not wearing masks, things we have to do as a business that we're required to do because we'll lose our license and can't operate if we don't. It's not what we really want to do or believe in doing sometimes, but we have to do it, and that allows us to open and be able to take care of others. So just in a restaurant environment, just do your best to be kind to each other, and we all have such a variety of opinions and positions with this and risks with this. And I think the main thing, like you said, is the conviction to believe what you believe, but let's try to find a way to figure this out. So.
Well, perfect. Well, there you go, Todd. Go ahead to the